Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where in the world you are, hello. Welcome to now Series 2 of Only Fools and Brotherly Forces.
Whoop whoop.
Introduce ourselves again. So I imagine you've already joined us for Series 1, but just in case you've wildly jumped in at Series 2. Brothers, Jamie and Bobby, avid fans of Only Fools and Horses for most of our life, to a very embarrassing level. And this is our podcast. We've nailed out Series 1, and we've moved swiftly on to Series 2, this episode being Long Legs of the Law. As always, as I said, joined by my brother Bobby.
Hello everyone, how are we doing?
Sorry, very nice for you to join us. That was quite a long time before I actually said for you to speak something.
It's fine, it's good. That was the world's longest intro, but I like it. Good to be here, good to be part of it, good for going into Series 2. I'm impressed we've come this far, and it's fun to see that we've still got a very long way to go. So yeah, it's good fun.
We've definitely managed to work ourselves into a bit of a groove. We were just eyeballing it from day one, really. We just said we'd take some notes of the episode and start talking and see what happens, and it's kind of just matured from there. And actually, it's the format hasn't really changed, but it feels comfortable. We know what's going on and what each other's strengths are going to be talking about. So it's nice.
Yeah,
it's fun. Super fun.
I think format is probably giving ourselves a little bit too much credit, but I'd like to think that something vaguely close to a format has presented itself. I think the trick for anyone who's just joining us is to realise we are very keen fans who've seen every episode dozens of times, but we're not obsessive. We're not these people that have been to loads of conventions and are going to be able to know every piece of trivia and perfect. We're just passionate fans like most and many people out there.
And I would challenge most people, though.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Like, I'm not saying we couldn't occasionally take part in a good fun trivia, but that's not really our bag. We're here, I think, to discuss it in the way that two friends, or in our case, brothers, will discuss any show they really enjoy. In a kind of a semi to mediumly light-hearted way.
And without further ado, let's dive in to Episode 1 of Series 2, released just a year later than the previous series. The first thing I was thinking was if there was a particular big gap in there, but negligible. It was a single year later, so there's not much change for the characters there. Long Legs the Law. First impressions before we even get started for me was just that it was a brilliant episode. It stood out from all the other seven episodes. It stood out for me as instantly probably one of the ones I had enjoyed the most up until now.
Yeah, I don't know what it was about it, but as I was kind of writing things down, I just found that it was really rich, and there was a lot going on, and there was a lot to kind of talk about. It was very interesting, as well as being obviously incredibly funny. Like you said, there wasn't been much of a gap. I mean, this came out in October, so, 10 months after the Christmas special. One thing I did find interesting, though, was the viewing figures were a bit tragic. I mean, not tragic.
Oh, really?
Well, 7.7 million is hardly tragic, but that is almost 1.5 million down from the first episode of the previous series, which isn't particularly.
Was it Only Fools and Horses that had a second release, though, and the figures are from the second release?
Yeah,
it from the original airing?
I'm never completely sure when these things are, but I think it might have been like a re-airing of Series 2 when it finally started to pick up pace. Not even a re-airing of Series 1 was that big. I think it took a couple of years to really kick off. It's a very humble beginning, the start of this series, and it's a shame there's a couple of million people who really missed out. I think what was great about this is it was just such a good concept. So to kind of slightly summarise that, basically, Rodney is going to be getting himself involved with a policewoman, which, just based on what we know from Series 1 of the characters, that's going to be a controversial event. So we open in the flat, and let's get into it.
Play a jingle first.
jingle. We open in the flat, standard. A lot of the episodes last series opened up in the flat. Rodney's looking a little bit worse for wear, very hungover. Grandad's pottering about, and then very quickly, Del, as he seems to also have done on several episodes, comes in the room, lights it up, bright and breezy.
Chirpy as ever.
Yeah, loving it. I mean, me and you are kind of known among our friends for not dealing with hangovers particularly well. I think we're definitely closer to Rodney than Del on this one.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think I can really relate to Del on how he's managed to go, seeing that they said they were out till 4 a.m. the previous day. So there's quite a contrast there. They've done well. I also love how Del is carrying a Mayfair and what I'm assuming is probably a Financial Times in his hand quite broadly.
I actually didn't even notice it was a Mayfair. That was great.
Yes,
vision.
It's
well
a broadsheet and a jazz mag in the same arm. I love it. Although, to be fair, in the next scene, he has given the Mayfair over to Rodney. So maybe that was always the plan. I reckon Del's probably had a little look at a couple
up,
of articles as well.
Rodney, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? But just, you know, striding proud around the flat with his Mayfair.
I think it's going to be hard not to put lots of quotes in this episode. I mean, we've generally kept it fairly modest, but I mean, there might be a few extra ones that for me there were just lines all over the place. So there's this really classic scene where they're telling Grandad about their night and all the things that are going on and all the sort of stuff, and it's like a cool, nice, long story. And then the punchline is brilliant.
What's the matter with you, Rodney? Sounds like a nice evening.
Grandad, when he said we was going out with a mother and her daughter, I assumed that I'd be with the daughter.
So, brilliant. I don't know why Rodney really goes along with these sorts of things. Like, once you arrive there, I mean, bear in mind it's a mother-daughter combo. This woman must be 45, 50 years old. And as Rodney says, an old sort with a cough, like... Would you stay out
the
till 4 in the morning with this? Like, I'd be like, at 10 a.m. I'd be like, oh, I've got a headache, I'm going home.
I'm just picturing them like arriving and Rodney just kind of like cruising up to the younger one and Del just kind of slowly nudging him towards the older woman. Just like imagine the kind of physicality there. What I also found quite fun is just after that they start saying, so they went to this bar after they'd been out for a meal or whatever, and they go to a bar and they start talking about Razzle and Monkey Harris, who are you know, other kind of trader guys that everyone knows from the estate. Now I don't recall Razzle being mentioned too often.
No, I don't think ever.
I don't think we ever, and we definitely never meet him. Monkey Harris, however, is like there's Monkey Harris and Sunglasses Ron and Paddy the Greek. These are like names we hear all the time, never meet, and I love that we never meet them because you don't need to.
Yeah, for sure.
And and this is the first time we hear about Monkey Harris, and that's good fun to see when that finally happens.
One of the things I wrote here, I just find myself, I generally know the episode so well that I'm writing notes before the things I'm writing about notes are actually happening. So they're telling the story about the policewoman coming into the bar when shit's kicking off, and Del goes into his impression of Rodney.
Conceded, it was pathetic. He was going, I'm fitting a kind of pictures like tomorrow. Do you want to come?
And before Del even does his impression, I'm sitting there, I'm writing down that it's just brilliant and Del's impression is so good because I can see it so well in my head before it's even come, and I know it's great, and then I've written the note and now I'm just waiting for it to happen, and there's just something about it. It does look like he has somehow morphed into a mini Rodney, and it's just brilliantly pulled off.
What's really good about that impression is I don't think we've actually seen Rodney do that, but we just know based on everything. In fact, the only time we've seen him with a woman was with Janice, and we talked about how he actually seemed quite confident and was kind of on a good little blag. And actually, the way that Del does his impression sounds much more like how we expect Rodney to be. But moving on from that, so Rodney's been trying to chat up this policewoman, and they're also talking about, some watches they've got off trigger. Del's doing his normal thing of pretending they're not nicked when they definitely are. This is definitely a recurring theme. But then they decide, after Grandad predictably burns the bacon, they decide to pop along to Sid's Caff.
Oh, just before there, we're just going to put in a little ding for a French phrase. There was a Respondo Civu play, which most people know it's respond, please, essentially. Yeah. But just to smash that one in there really quickly. But the British calf, there's something about a British calf. Like, I don't know how many listeners are going to be from different places outside of England. Only Fools and Horses is well known for being very well known here, but it's not huge in other places in the world. But oh, it's something about it. They just haven't changed. I remember coming up to uni with you, Bob, and going up to quite a few calves up there. Not that I don't anyway. And they're just the same all over the country. Just like no frills, dark and dingy plastic chairs. But they're going to give you a... I actually just naturally was going to say pucker breakfast without it. And it's just naturally going out. Just a proper good breakfast.
I mean, Dale lists his itemised breakfast, and I'm just sitting there drooling. Bear in mind that there is no way I could get anything like that where I am in Norway. I mean, you know, cook breakfast here, give something to be desired. It's one of the things I miss the most. So having a wander into Sid's calf was a real emotional moment for me. But it's great. I mean, Sid has only a few lines, but is spot on the Sid we know and the Sid he always is.
Yeah, and he stays in there for the rest of the whole time. He's there right to the end.
Yeah, which is weird because for most of it, he has like two or three lines a season, it seems. Like, hardly ever there, but he always does the job great. He looks the part. Like, I'm sure that's how he got cast. They just went into a calf and pulled him out. But yeah, it's great. And I do think the actual cafe itself, I'm pretty sure there are several cafes throughout the series. The actual...
Oh yeah, definitely. Different change.
There's sort of three or four at least. But like you said, they're all fairly the same. And you
just grotty, but that's fine. That's what you want. Otherwise, absolutely, the breakfast would cost loads. So just go to the grotty places.
This scene then ends with Rodney finally admitting to Dale that he has a date tonight, and it is with the arresting officer from the previous night.
Cue the cutlery falling out of his arm. Like, how does he get away with that? Like, it's a friend. Like, he's genuinely like you. Well, okay, an acquaintance. We don't know how much their friendship are, but we're assuming that they're well acquainted. Like, he's just gone in and stolen shit off a mate, off a local place. Like, I don't know. Maybe Dale's not all that nice guy. Like, maybe you have to. If he was your mate, you'd have to watch him. Like, he's stealing.
I mean, you definitely would. But I mean, you know, I've got some great mates that I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't leave in a room with a 50. But the scene ends, and then we are back in the flat. So we're in the flat. And Grandad and Dale are having a genuinely quite emotional discussion about what this means for them. I think, you know, Grandad is genuinely gutted and confused. Like, really doesn't understand why... really emotionally just doesn't get it. Why would Rodney ever dream of being with a policewoman? It just...
I mean, I'm sympathising with Grandad here. I mean, why would anyone do that?
Well, I mean, this is actually the big question. I was kind of going to get to it probably towards the end of this scene, but we can just get into it now. Whose side do you take on this? Rodney's, you know, free man, date whoever he wants, independent dude, or Grandad's like, we don't fit, this is...
It's just thoughtless. The life that he is in is clearly one of questionable morals and legality, and you're basically just chucking a cat amongst the pigeons. Like, it's almost like a malicious thing. Like, it's hard to think that you would be so clueless to do that without some kind of spite. So he's either being a bit of a git, or he's just stupid. Like,
he is just stupid. I mean, this episode is all about Rodney's stupidity. But you know, Dale is very like poignant. I remember there's a great quote where he's very like deep and honest in explaining to Rodney the problem here.
Have you stopped to consider how your actions are going to affect our business? Don't you realise that them streets out there are our boardroom, our factory floor, and the people that live in them are our customers, our business acquaintances? How do you think they're going to feel about doing business with a grass?
Bloody hell, Dale. I'm just taking a bird to the pictures and suddenly I'm Bertie Smalls.
You're not taking a bird. You're taking a policewoman.
Yeah, and then of course Rodney comes in saying, like, you know, he's only gone on a date, he's not Bertie Smalls, who was a bloke I had to Google. Don't know if you know who Bertie Smalls is. But
no, he's not the guy of the Bassetts.
No, not the Bassett. yeah, he was a grass, unsurprisingly, hence the joke. Famously towards the Cray twins, among many others.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So, yeah, that period. London gangster, hence why it's a good quote for Rodney to use, I guess. But, yeah, and then also, of course, Del can never resist doing the whole I raised you speech, which is always a go-to for him. It was a bit of a what have the Romans ever done for us sort of type moment. And Rodney's like, what have you ever done for me? And then Del Boy lists all the things he's done. And he's like, apart from that.
I wrote a note that this is like one of a few times, especially in the earlier series, where they have this sort of dynamic of the to and fro. Rodney seeking or wanting independence in general, and or being not defiant, but trying to play down how much he depends on Del, or that, well, maybe that's the wrong thing to say. I think Del is a bit overbearing.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And Rodney tries to escape that on a few occasions, but he's got no hand to play. Like, it's just tough shit,
basically. Well, I mean, it was literally, in many ways, a story of the very first episode of Big Brother is the same thing. Rodney claiming he's independent and can make it on his own and doesn't need Del, and we all know how that one ended, two nights in a doss house. So that is kind of his way, because he is a muppet, really.
We do get a bit of Cockney rhyming slang while the argument's going on. I don't know if you picked that one up as he closed the door.
Yeah, the Nelson riddle,
clearly rhyming with piddle.
Yeah.
Which is also a slang word for taking a piss.
Yeah, I love those. I love those double-layered Cockney rhyming slangs.
And then this is something that I thought was quintessentially Only Fools, which is this quote. Maybe I'll explain it before I even play the quote. It's their ability to be able to insinuate something quite rude, but then completely curveball it to being something very, very innocent.
What have I done for you? I brought you up. I fed you, I've clothed you. I picked you up when you fell down. I wiped your tears away.
which is just brilliant. And this happens quite a lot, where they're talking about something either vulgar or rude, and the gag or the punchline is set up to essentially be a profanity of some description, and just somehow curveballs in something which is very innocent, and everyone knows what's happening, and it's basically like saying the word, but it gets a laugh every time. And they make it family friendly. Like, the entire show is so family friendly the whole time that it never goes blue, really. It never goes really, really dirty. It never goes, there's never profanity. And I love really, really rude, vulgar comedy. But there's something very charming and respectful about that, that it is always a family show.
Yeah, I think that trick specifically is definitely something you see in a lot of TV shows and family stuff these days, but I think they do it particularly well on Only Fools, for sure. And yeah, even when they have, I think we talked about this once a bit in a previous episode as well, is sometimes when they have adult themes, it's always done in a way that a kid might not get it.
As we didn't when we were first watching it.
But it doesn't matter, exactly. Like, for example, here, they talk about how he got done for smoking weed. And as a kid, I had no idea what that meant, but it didn't really matter. It's not like, I didn't ask any awkward questions. Our parents got away with it. Did you notice the fine he got for being caught smoking weed?
There was the fiver for the motor offence.
Yeah, but the moped one was a fiver. His fine for being caught smoking weed at college, £300.
Oh, did they say that?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed it.
£300.
That's a lot of money.
That is so much money. I mean, these days
they're getting rounds of drinks in for less than a fiver. So
exactly. Well, that's no, what I mean.
It was a quid, wasn't it?
It's so much for then as well. That'd be so much now. I mean, now you get a slap on the wrist, but Jesus.
I just went to the pub now, and it was a particularly expensive pub. We had two drinks, and it was £10. So that's essentially like 100% more, or if it is 300 times more than a pound of the round of drinks, it's equivalently 3,000.
Yeah, potentially. It's a stupid amount of money for being caught smoking a bit of weed. But, you know.
Ironically, I just went to the pub with someone who is a police officer as well.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you did, didn't you? I forgot about that.
Which was quite funny, and had some conversations that sort of rolled around similar themes. So it was quite surreal that I then jumped into this episode.
Yeah, nice. So a couple more bits I want to talk about in this scene before we move on, which you've got to do, but I know there's so much to talk about here. Were you impressed how they both beautifully used whom, for which I'm terrible at doing?
I registered it as, like, fair play. Like, it was, I don't know.
I really respect a good whom.
Yeah, yeah, I like correct use of the English language, and there was a nod, like, yep, good, but I mean, I didn't write it down.
I wrote it down. I was like, I really must nail the whoms more often. This rhythm comes from this mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons and the tides of the sea. So eventually Rodney leaves saying, or is about to leave, and saying, look, this is happening. To which Del Boy says, fine, as far as I'm concerned, you don't exist. To which Rodney looks genuinely petrified, like, fuck, I really didn't realise how serious this was. And then, of course, seconds later, Del says,
and Rodney.
What?
It's been raining, them roads will be treacherous. Drive carefully.
To which Rodney's response, it's clearly in his face, is, thank fuck for that. He hasn't completely disowned me yet. Good news. But then Del Boy and Grandad continue their very meaningful conversation. And as I spoke about before, like, you know, whose side are we on? And it's when you realise that, yeah, you've definitely got to be on Del Boy's side, because, as he says, it's serious shit.
But you know what the most sobering thought of the lot is? One wrong word from that plonker Rodney and I could end up doing 5 years.
It's a new scene, still in the flat, but now it's night time. You know this from the good old-fashioned way that TV has ended, with the national anthem followed by white noise. I didn't mean to.
Was that what happened?
Yeah,
I thought he turned it off because it had just turned up because they were going to bed.
No, so it was national anthem, white noise, then you turn the telly off.
Oh, was that what it?
Yeah, which I meant to actually. I was going to Google and check when that stopped happening, because that is like a really, like, classic thing from back in the day on English telly. Like, everyone knows that TV finished with the national anthem, followed by blank, no more telly.
That's how epic TV was when it was first discovered. Like, every single day ended with the national anthem.
Yeah, what's respect. It's a big deal.
What a triumph.
And so what happens? Suddenly they see Rodney's come home, but he is not alone. He has brought with her the policewoman. Sandra is introduced to us.
Danger, danger.
High voltage. Yeah, I mean, why would you bring her home?
Yeah.
After everything that's been discussed, I mean, it's just beyond ridiculous.
That's it. You don't need to say any more, and it is ridiculous. And upon realization, Dale goes from very, very sleepy to very, very lively,
bright as a button. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And says,
he's done what? What's he trying to do to me? Quick, Granddad, hide things.
What things?
Well, everything, innit? That's bent for a start. Quick, get the booze, Granddad, the booze.
Everything is hooky. Like the overwhelming majority of things in there are probably not legal.
Well, I mean, he says later in the episode, and he's probably, like, he's probably making this sound better than it is, that he says, like, half of the stuff in his flat is legal, the other half ain't. Yeah. and you know, who's what. But this is just such a ridiculous series of unfortunate events. I think the best thing that really captured the moment is actually not something we can quote because it's a visual. And when Del Boy finds out that Rodney's given a watch to Sandra, one of these hooky watches, is Del just, like, clenches his fist and bites it, hiding behind the couch, just like a, I can't believe this is happening to me. And it's just great. You just see the genuine torment.
It was the whole episode was really visual. It's actually one of the very earliest notes that I put on this, because even from the early part, because it's all taking part in the flat, It's all about the dialogue and the visual. Like, it's not having different things to pique our interest. And the visuals are just brilliant. When he calls Rodney over to the just before he calls Rodney over to the drinks cabinet, and a brilliant quote that the granddad says when she asks him what you've been up to, and he goes,
"We've been in all evening, haven't we, Granddad?
Hey? Yeah, and we've got witnesses to prove it."
Yeah, and it's just like the complete unrelaxed and on edge anxiety of them both. Just by having it, like, if I had something dodgy or illegal and someone came, like, I'd just like act natural and just see. Hopefully, nothing happened.
But they've got so much so suspicious, so illegal stuff that they just don't know what they're.
You're screwed. So like, just double down. Like, what are you going to do about it? Just screw it.
And literally, you could tally them off. I started, but I got bored of just ridiculously stupid moves that Rodney makes. Like, he's given her the watch. He points out that they've got a police record that hasn't even come out yet, to which Del reacts with immense speed. He points out the several cases of imported extra strength gin that Del has hidden behind a curtain. And he's just like, how can anyone be this stupid? I mean, we've talked about this before with Rodney, that he can just be such a tit, and he's on absolute gear 5 Muppetness in this entire episode.
when Del does call him over to the drinks cabinet to devise a plan to get the watch off her, it's quite a rare camera angle. It's one that I don't recall seeing almost any other time, which is back into the flat. They actually do two camera angles here, because they do, as far as I could tell, it was a live shot, and they turn to look at Sandra, and the camera angle's going back that way.
There's
a bit of clever camera work, but that doesn't happen in the flat very often.
No,
it normally is the wider shot or the tighter shots within the flat. But there's also a bit of a funny thing there. I don't know if you heard it. A glass falls off the cabinet and smashes.
What'd you give me that watch for?
Don't worry, I'll give you the money.
No, I didn't. Did that happen?
Yeah. So he's like doing the drinks, and then while it's going on, a glass falls off and smashes. And Rodney actually, Nicholas Lyndhurst, has a little look, but then they carry on the scene anyway.
Oh, no, I didn't notice that. But it's funny you mentioned that whole scene and that camera angle stuff. It did look great the way they kind of brought it in really close to the quarters, because there's not a lot of that. Everything is always very far back. It is like a stage, because it is kind of filmed like live audience kind of style on big sets.
Sure.
So it's fun when you have those little scenes and get really kind of deep in close. But I mean, the whole thing is just a series of unfortunate events. It's just a car crash from start to finish, but it's great fun. Yeah.
And just before, just before the scene ends, Grandad, having been out of the shot for a good few minutes, comes back into shot, still holding the tyre, which is just brilliant.
Yeah, the tyre which Del has been specifically saying, get rid of that, that's bent for a start.
he basically just takes a glass and throws gin onto her while she's not looking, which is his deviant plan to get the watch off, which works. And I can't remember exactly when, but there's two French phrases that he does here for double dings. One is Apolitain Border Controller. I'm not sure about Apolitain, but Border Controller is clearly border control. And La Plume de la Rotonde, which is, when I translated it literally, it said the feather of the rotonde. It's either a flower or a building.
You know, there's definitely going to be a fluent French speaker listening to our podcast who fucking hates us so much.
That came up with a building when I was Googling it, and I was not that interested to find out exactly what
it was. I mean, there are times where he does mention place names in France. That's not unusual, so I wouldn't put it past him. Eventually, this car crash of an evening comes to an end, and Rodney is then walking Sandra back to her flat, and we're in a hallway of her flat building.
This is the first time they've ever gone for a date, and they met yesterday, and yet they're having a kiss and a very, very quite intense embrace of a cuddle, and like, he's
rich coming from two members of the Tinder generation. Not that I've ever been anywhere near it. I was fortunately spoken for before Tinder existed. But I mean,
it wasn't the fact that it was sexual and non-sexual. I just thought it was familiar. I thought it was overly familiar for people that have known each other less than 24 hours. Good. Right, fine. Well, I've written a note on it, so suck good. It. What I thought was funny before he does something noble, which was a nice redemption for the end and basically kind of makes everything okay, he did before doing that try and his defense was he had taken cinema and bought her a doner kebab, like as if yeah, that dismisses all of the wrongdoing that he's done. It's like, oh, I bought you a doner kebab tonight, and it's like, oh,
he is so cheap, right. Though he's so cheap.
And a packet of cashews, which he,
to be fair, cashews aren't cheap. Right, moving on. So she then points out that she is fully aware that a very large percentage of the contents of his flat is nicked, and makes him threats. And she asks, who's to blame? Who's the brains behind the outfit? And Rodney, to his credit, the first sensible thing he's done in 30 minutes of television, takes the blame. But yeah, so they get 24 hours before she's going to bust in with her CID friends and a warrant and, start asking questions. So that's Rodney goes home and tells them they've got 24 hours to clear the place.
We don't see that happen, but...
But that's obviously what's happened. Yeah. Del obviously doesn't take this very well. The scene actually just start with him throttling Rodney, although that's not... There's rumours that he'd calmed down but then got angry again. But yeah, what I just find interesting here is that they've literally just gutted the entire flat.
Yeah, there's literally a carpet and a cabinet left.
And they're about to remove the cabinet.
And they've just got... Even then, they've got stupid things like... One of the only items he pulls out from this cabinet is a very floppy baby teddy doll thing.
Yeah.
That's made out of cotton. And, like, why? Why is that even in there?
Why is there a cuddly toy in your drinks cabinet? Why? But, I mean, I think, obviously, at this point, you know, then the button on the episode is Rodney saying he wants to keep a bottle of the aftershave just in case Sandra comes round early. To which, obviously, Del is infuriated that how could he possibly still be thinking about that? And, I mean, quite frankly, Rodney just deserves a smack at this point. It's a shame we don't see it because he fucking deserves it.
Yeah, the way Del chases after him with his feet and something heavy.
Yeah, because he's carrying an amp or something. That's it. That's the episode. It's a really great episode. There's a lot there.
It's funny. I've actually found this quite hard, like something about the not so good ones. It's easier, I guess, to criticise, not being nasty, but to have things to talk about. Whereas there was so many good stuff at this, I kind of just wanted to talk it out or quote it, and because it was just funny for itself. Like we haven't really gone off on too many tangents, like we have done before. It was just solid. Like if you haven't watched this episode yet. If you're not following along with us, definitely go and watch this one. It was brilliant. It stood out for me.
It's great, and what I found interesting was, I mean, one of the things I've sort of knocked down on, or especially the last episode, was there wasn't a lot there. There weren't many ancillary characters. There weren't many different places they went, and just not a lot seemed to happen. And you could definitely, a lot of those criticisms, in a way, hold to this one, but... The concept is just better, and the whole storyline, and there's just so many more jokes, and it's so good. I mean, we talked about, was there going to be a big difference between series 1 and 2 in scope and scale and budget, and for all those things, definitely not. But in terms of like depth of writing and comedy and these characters maybe a bit more fleshed out and stuff, definitely. I mean, he's obviously worked more and really crammed in just joke on joke on joke.
I think as the series does progress, there's more freedom to go more slapstick humour. Like there are things that are going to come up over the next series where there is big laughs of things of ultimate stupidity where there's like huge payoffs. I won't talk about them now, but we know the classic moments, like the chandelier moment, okay, for example. There's lots of those sort of chandelier moments that happen that are just big payoff for episodes and so on. We're not getting those now, but we are what we are getting is consistent good laughs, good jokes, and that episode was perfect. It was one of those.
I really like, I mean, we only have one extra character. Obviously, we had a very brief cameo almost from Sid. One other character, who of course we never see again. But I thought Sandra was really good. I mean, she looked and acted and was very believable as a policewoman. I thought she did the job great. And I was really surprised when I looked her up on IMDb to find out she's got about 5 acting credits in about a 10-year period in the sort of late 70s, early 80s, and has done no acting since, because I thought she was very good. But I did find one interesting thing on her, about her. So she's a writer, it seems, largely, and she was a contributor, which I don't really know what it means, whether it's a co-author or just a very small part of, but it's something else that is something we both really enjoy. She was a contributor to the official sort of modern sequel to the Winnie the Pooh books, randomly.
Wow, what does contributor mean though? Like,
what's the thing? I don't know. Maybe she wrote. Maybe it's many small stories. I don't know. I've not read the books. I've only ever read the originals, so I've no idea. But yeah, she's a children's author amongst other things. She's got several kind of kids' books that have been made into TV shows and stuff. But she's done almost no acting since. But I thought she was really good.
Yeah, I didn't notice massively that it was a standout performance. I think you've done some pretty excessive research into an extra, essentially. But cool, good find. Yeah, Winnie the Pooh. Love Winnie. I've got a tattoo of Winnie the Pooh. I'm not ashamed of it, so I don't mind that.
I know the Winnie the Pooh theme tune in 2 languages. Like, I'm all about Winnie the Pooh.
That is great, actually. That's quite a good point.
Yeah, nice. Okay. But he's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and old cities
work? La 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 la. Well, thanks for coming back for series 2. The next episode we have is Ashes to Ashes, where we'll get a bit more airtime from Trigger. And actually maybe one of those big payoff moments that I was just talking about. I think towards the end of this one we do get a chandelier-y sort of moment, so it's going to be fun watching that. I don't think I remember much about the episode though, really. I don't know it very well at all.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just going to be this series in general, and as I've said before, I do like amalgamate all the grand kind of era, and yeah, these definitely aren't the episodes I've watched the most, even if it is still, you know, a dozen times. It's That's not funny, as often as...
I actually think these are the episodes I've watched the most in general, yeah. Like all of them. Yeah, like you think about when Raquel and Damien comes along, like some of the episodes I don't know that well, really.
No, I for me, series I think I know the best are early Albert. A series 4 and 5 are like my bread. I remember being a kid at like whatever, 10, and I'd go to the shelf and I went series 4, 5, like I like Granddad, I like watching them, but I mostly watch them on TV. They're not necessarily the ones I picked out to watch, and I didn't necessarily enjoy the later ones as much. I liked I think early Albert is my sweet spot. But so are these episodes. I think maybe I've watched a little bit less, because this one I really had forgotten just how good it was, and definitely underappreciated it.
But I feel like I had a peek at some of the episodes left in this one and the ones before, and I know 3 pretty well, and I feel like I know these ones inside out. It helps that they're shorter episodes, they're 28, 29 minutes or whatever, but like I was saying, on this I was writing notes before they happen, even on the small things like gestures, not just on big plot points. I really feel like I know these really, really well. Ashes to Ashes, I think, is really the exception. And I think as we get to 4 or 5, as the episodes get longer and more happens, and certainly the storyline is more complex and there's more characters, for sure, and we know them and there's more coming on, I think it's a lot harder to know those back-to-back. So I think it's going to be...
It's going to be a lot harder to summarise. because they get... right now, there's five scenes, four people, and, I mean, we've been dragging this out forever. So, looking forward to that.
Yeah, we have to cut these down a little bit. So, chances are, I'm going to have to do a crazy edit on this one, but it's probably been a slightly longer episode. But it was such a good episode with so much stuff to talk about. So, thanks for everyone for joining us for the first episode of Series 2. Really promising start. Looking forward to nailing out the rest of these episodes. As always, we've got a nice topical bit of outro music for you from the episode. So if you were watching it, the police walking on the moon gets mentioned. So what a perfect way to say goodbye. We will see you for the next episode, Ashes to Ashes, very soon. Thanks very much, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, Jake. Thanks, everybody. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook /Only Fools Brothers, or on Twitter, we're @OnlyFoolsBros. Or if you want to send us a longer message, you can email us at onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. Also, really appreciate it if you could give us some sort of rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much. Goodbye.